Welcome to China Money Podcast, your source for local knowledge and insights on investing in China. Go to our website, chinamoneypodcast.com, for more great episodes. I'm your host, Nina Xiang. Today's podcast is a special program on the most critical question of the Chinese economy. Is China's economy unbalanced? It's surprising how little debate there has been for such an important issue. Today we'll hear the most unconventional analysis from someone who probably have done the most research on this. Yukong Huang, former World Bank China Director and currently Senior Associate at Washington DC-based think tank Carnegie Endowment. China's unbalanced economy is often supported by the following data points. In 2010, investment accounted 48.6% of China's GDP, much higher than any other major economy. Domestic consumption, however, only accounted 35%, the lowest among major economies. But I, for one, have always been puzzled. First, retail sales in China has been growing at double digits for years. Consumption growth has been nothing but strong in China. Secondly, if you live in China, it's hard not to believe that the Chinese people are spending more now than any time in history. So when I heard Mr. Huang's talk a while back at the FCCC event in Beijing, I was thrilled and fascinated. Here is finally a convincing, shockingly counterintuitive, and thoroughly researched analysis that puts all the pieces together. So today's podcast is that recorded talk of Mr. Huang's analysis on this subject. The original talk is too long, so I only use the most relevant part of the talk with little editing. Also want to apologize for the sound quality, as it's a rather crowded event. Mr. Huang also used charts and graphs for the talk, but the lack of them shouldn't cause a problem, as he also explained orally the essence of each chart. So here it is. Hope you will find it refreshing.
Now, let's go back to the unbalanced growth argument. Nevertheless, people are very concerned about the fact that the consumption as a share of GDP has been falling, and it's around 35% of GDP, the lowest of any major economy. China's investment rate as a share of GDP has been growing, is now above 45%, the highest of any major economy. So obviously, most people would say, this is obviously a problem. It's got the highest investment rate of any economy. It's got the lowest consumption GDP rate of any economy. Surely China is doing something wrong. And in particular, the point is made, if consumption is only 35% of GDP, households in China must be repressed. People must be suffering somehow. It is the lowest ratio of any major economy. And then the discussion in the media, the discussion in academics, even within the Chinese government, is how do I stimulate consumption? Because this imbalance clearly is a problem, and it creates an image of a problem. But there's something wrong here. Consumption is the lowest ratio of in relation to GDP of any major economy, but the growth of consumption per person in China is the highest in the world. 8% compounded for decades, much more rapidly than India, other middle-income countries, South Korea, Brazil, not to speak of the OECD countries. Here's China. Here's everybody else. So, funny enough, you sit there and say, well, consumption as a share is the lowest in the world, but the growth rate of consumption per person is the highest in the world? So, one number suggests a problem, the other number suggests a major success. And this is part of the issue of why perceptions differ. You can either be very optimistic or very pessimistic, depending upon what variable you key in on. And most people do not key in on this. They key in on the share of consumption of GDP, China's unbalanced growth. Is unbalanced growth in terms of consumption as a share of GDP a problem? And I say, not really. If you compare China, this is the decline, to three star performers, Japan, Taiwan, Korea, you see, they all went through this decline. of the share of consumption in GDP, they all had a significant unbalanced growth phase in their history. And what I'm going to explain to you is why and how does China compare. Now, the country which had the most unbalanced growth, period, in their history, in terms of consumption and share of GDP falling, is the United States. The share of consumption of GDP in the United States fell 40 percentage points between 1930 to 1950. It was the most unbalanced growth process ever recorded in economic history, but it made the U.S. the global superpower. And it's just a reminder to us, actually, that unbalanced growth is actually associated with the buildup of a tremendous economic strength rather than a liability, which is what most of the newspapers and everyone argues about. Now, let's go back and explain to ourselves this decline, which is downward sloping. We just showed that for every successful country, it happens, but you have to go back to different time periods. You don't compare them with today. If you compare them today with these countries today, they will say, well, it's increasing or stable, China's declining, must be a problem. Wrong comparison. You have to compare with this. Of course, they were poor back then. China is much poorer than these countries today. So you're comparing the wrong countries. And that creates a real perception of a problem when actually you compare it with here and you realize it's a virtue. Now, how do you explain the decline in consumption as a share of GDP? Now, every time I get into this, I see my audience, their eyes gloss over. It's too technical, not understandable, it doesn't make sense, so I'm going to try again. I've tried it so many times, I've always failed. So here's what I'm trying to do. Consumption, household consumption, as a share of the size of your economy, is falling. So we have to understand what determines household consumption. Two variables. Household consumption, what a household consumes, is dependent upon what its income is. If your household income increases, you consume more. If it declines, you consume less. Straightforward. The second factor, savings. You get this income. If you decide to save more, you won't consume as much. If you decide to save less, you'll consume relatively more. So what happens to household consumption over time, and what happens to their savings rates over time? Determines that line, the consumption to GDP ratio. Okay, so here's the issue. Why is it falling? Obviously, it has something to do with household income is falling to share GDP, and it has something to do with the savings rate out of that income is increasing. And what I want to show you is that some of these changes are caused by distortions or bad policies, but some are really positive things. And if we understand why this is happening, we can then tell whether China's economy is running into a problem or it's going to go and collapse. Now, this is what's happening to personal income as a share of GDP, falling. Okay? That's why consumption is falling as a share of GDP. Personal income is falling. But the interesting question here is, gosh, here's a country growing at double digits, doing really well. So tell me, you call, why is household income falling as a share of GDP? Because that doesn't sound like a very successful country, right? That's a problem. And I'm going to show you that's not a problem. It's actually a good thing. This diagram is too complicated, but let me try to explain it the following way. And the headline in the announcement here was, this model, or my theory, is that this unbalanced growth is a consequence of unfinished urbanization. What do I mean? I'm a poor farmer in Xinjiang. I grow $100 of rice. That's my total income, total value of production. Of that $100, $90 of it goes to me as the laborer, the owner. $10 went for seeds or interest or lines or credit, whatever. But essentially 90% of the value of agricultural production accrues to the farmer. It sounds plausible. Very simple, low productivity agriculture. I decide to leave, can't make a living. I get a job in Shanghai. That person pays me $300 wages for the year. I've tripled my salary, right? I'm better off. I produce an iPod, Foxconn, or something like this. It's sold overseas. That product has a value. This is the value of industrial production, right? Of that value of industrial production, how much comes to me? No more than 40%. The rest is rent, capital, property, whatever it is. Entrepreneurial, you know, rights, royalties, blah, blah, blah. Am I better off? Clearly, my salary is tripled. Is China better off? Obviously, because we're producing something which is much more valued globally. Economy benefits from productivity increases. The manufacturing company benefits from high profits. The poor farmer gets his salary tripled. What happens to disposable income as a share of the size of the economy? It falls. It falls because I was before producing something which 90% went to the household. I'm now producing something which only 40% goes to the household. And as more and more people move over, the share of household income to GDP declines. And that's a good thing. But all the analysts call it a bad thing. And that is why South Korea, China, South Korea, Taiwan, Japan, the United States, they all had this. It was a good thing. And it is the secret to China's growth rate. Because the more the people move over, the more profits increase, the more incomes increase, the more rapidly the country grows. So the literature has turned what I would say a good thing into a bad thing. And just to illustrate it, here is agriculture becoming less important, services industries becoming more important in the economy. Here's labor share in agriculture 90%, in industry and services only 50%. As people move from agriculture up here to industry here, household income with a share of the size of the economy falls, but everybody in the country benefits. So it's a very hard message out there. But someone should be saying, China's economy is becoming more imbalanced. This is good for everybody. But no one writes that. They say it's the problem, right? Let's continue. Now we've talked about disposable income. The next issue is, what happened to the savings rates of households in the last 10 years? And the answer is, this is GDP accounts numbers. It jumped up a lot over the last 10 years, savings rates of households. But we don't know from this curve why. So we do surveys. So household surveys, the blue line is the household survey. Yes, it shows this dramatic increase over time of households based upon household surveys. But the strange thing is, this increase in household savings rates is really only in urban areas. It doesn't occur in rural areas. So whatever is explaining savings rates in China is urban sector specific, not national specific. And everyone writes about this as a general thing. All Chinese are frugal or something. Or the social security system is bad, so Chinese save more. But that does not explain why this increase in savings rate only occurs in urban areas and not in rural. Okay, so if you go deeper, then you have to ask yourself slightly more. And the answer is, people talk about, well, social security system is bust, people in urban areas have to save more. I would say yes. Yeah, this is probably where people in urban areas are saving more because they want to buy a house. Yes, that's true. Even single men in urban areas are saving more because there are fewer women and they have to save up for the dowry. They save more. Yes. But the reason why households in China are saving much more, and it's only occurred in the last 7 or 8 years, not throughout 3 decades, is one reason. And never addressed in the newspapers. Migrant workers. Migrant workers save 40 to 45% of their income. Established people in Shanghai, Guangzhou, Fujian, whatever, they save 20 to 25. They now account for 40% of the labor force, in some places 50% of the labor force in the major cities. Their incomes have gone up a lot in the last 4 or 5 years because of these wage pressures. They explain the totality of the savings rates in China. And why do market workers save more? Pretty obvious. They can't buy houses, they don't have access to services, they can't spend a lot of things, they don't have the consumption habits, they're saving for a rainy day, they're going to go boom, 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 boom. It's like people in jail save a lot more than people out of jail. But just, now, why is this important though? Well, this factor, migrant worker savings, combined with what I call the agricultural rural split, explains 70% of the growing imbalances in China. But the papers focus on the other 30% of factors which I consider insignificant or minor. Savings rates are incredibly important because here is savings, blue line. Here is the rate of investment, the share of GDP. And this is the current account deficit, the trade deficit. In an accounting sense, the difference between savings and investment is your current account balance. So China's trade surplus in the last 7 or 8 years is totally explained by the savings rate increasing at a rate much more rapidly than investment. Now this is really strange because the world is fixated on the fact that investment in this country is increasing so rapidly. And then you think about it, my God, savings actually increasing even more rapidly. And this divergence began here. Not all the way through here, but here. And this gap is your saving, is your trade surplus. So if we could explain this excess savings rate over investment, we could explain China's trade surplus. And then if we can understand that, we can then figure out how you can eliminate it. Very simple proposition. If you give migrant workers UCO, China would be a trade deficit country, not a trade surplus. It would eliminate it totally. That's kind of a shocking thing because people are talking about structural reform, extreme rate management, retooling all the industries, everything in the world trying to get China to become not a trade surplus country. There's one simple little thing you could do. And then China would become a trade deficit country when Xi Jinping talks to Obama. You could say, well, I don't have a trade surplus, Mr. President. You, United States, still have a major trade deficit, but it's obviously not due to me because I don't even have a trade surplus. It would change the nature of the debate into a more productive way.
Thank you for listening. That's today's podcast. Hope you enjoyed it. Lastly, I want to remind everyone that you can go to our website, ChinaMoneyPodcast.com, to see many other great episodes with other great guests. You can also subscribe to the podcast on iTunes. And remember to go to our Facebook page or follow us on Twitter at ChinaMoneyPod. Thank you so much for listening. Until next time.